This is Bronco Tuesday, taking a look at Boise State Athletics with coaches and players. Now here's Bob Beeler, Chris Walton, and Paul Jay on the home of the Broncos, 670 KBOI.
It is Bronco Tuesday, and with us today, women's tennis. Coach Beck Rogar is here with us, along with Anya Dokic, a freshman from Perth, Australia. And I guess first question, always with these kind of people, how did you two hook up?
Good question. I had heard about Anya being a great player from actually a player that I had been recruiting a couple of years ago, who ended up deciding she was going to play professionally. And truth be told, we were still friends on Facebook, and I wrote her and said, hey, do you know of anybody that's looking? And she wrote me back and said, there's a great player down in Perth, and got in touch with Anya, and just couldn't be more pleased that that we were able to get in touch, because she's an just a phenomenal player and just a great kid. So we're excited to have her here, and can't wait to see what she's going to do.
So, Anya, why Boise State? I mean, there's how many colleges in the United States? If you decided you wanted to come here to play collegiate tennis, why this one?
Well, I did have, a few other offers that I was looking at, but I think it was actually Coach Beck that persuaded me to come, because he's awesome, and so is Coach K, and just all the girls are so nice, and I met them on my visit here in October, and I just thought it was awesome. So,
how are you coping with winter?
Oh, I don't like it. I've never seen snow before. I've never seen snow before, so no, I don't like it at all.
Plus, in Perth, it's summer right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's over 100 degrees over there, so.
Yeah, she had asked me before she came. She's like, does it snow a lot? And I said, it definitely snows. You know, I wanted to be honest, right? It definitely snows, but then I didn't mention that it was going to be the coldest winter in 30 years and all the snow.
I'm going to say this just so that, you can say this. I've been here, this is my ninth year doing the games. The snow that we've had in the previous eight doesn't add up to what we have had this year.
Not a chance.
I've been here for a long, long, long time. And this is in the top three worst winters ever. And I've been here 50 years. So.
Yeah.
Now, Beck, in addition to Anya, you've got three other freshmen. And I'm looking here, five-star, four-star, five-star, four-star. Pretty good recruiting class.
Yeah, our recruiting class for 2016 was ranked top 25 in the country this past year, and then that was even actually before we added Anya. So adding another 5-star recruit to that list was we're excited. We feel like we're young. We're the youth brigade right now. We've got a couple of sophomores and a junior and four freshmen that'll be in the lineup. And but at the same time, I'll tell you what, we're not looking at it as a building year really, because these guys can play. So we got to learn a lot. We got to hit the road running and just take everything as a lesson, good and bad. But these guys are mature for freshmen, and I just I'm super excited about not only how they hit the ball, but how they're coming together as a group and just what they all want together. So our goals are high this year. They're lofty, and we've been working really hard, and these guys are jumping in the system really well. So four freshmen, but we're feeling excited about that.
How does the youth on your team change what you do?
That's a good question. I mean, I think basically with a young team like this, you want to work a lot on consistency just in terms of how you're competing. When people are young, sometimes they're in new and different situations for the first time in college tennis. And so, just really kind of focusing on, making sure they're very confident in their game style and who they are, with their abilities and what they're trying to do out there. And then really just making sure that in any given situation, we handle ourselves really well, calmly, clear, under control. And so that's really the biggest thing with these guys, is just getting them out there and learning how to compete, their best. But at the same time, like I said, these guys, a player like Anya, she's been around the block, so to speak. I mean, she's played a lot of big time tournaments. She's a 4-time national champ in Australia. She's played all the big events. I mean, it's one of those things where, I feel like she has the experience where that transition is going to be a little bit less rough for this batch of freshmen, because a lot of them have been there before.
All right. We're talking with Beck Rogar and Anya Dokic.
Back to Bronco Tuesday with Chris, Paul, and Bob on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. KBOI News Time, 8:46. Beck Rogar, BSU tennis coach, is here, along with freshman Anya Dokic from Perth, Australia. 10 of your first 11 matches, your spring season starting now, this weekend, are at home.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
You said it. We couldn't be more excited to be here playing in front of our fans, and You know, we always get a great turnout. We've been ranked top 10 in the ITA and the college tennis rankings for the last 2 years for our ITA attendance, which is a big deal when we get that many people out. Travel everywhere, and you know, we get some of the best crowds there are. So we're really excited about that. I mean, it definitely helps, and definitely helps with a young group. And, you know, just the way the scheduling worked out this year, it's, you know, we got a chance to have some great teams. We got four teams ranked in the top 40 coming into place at home. And, you know, we're just looking forward to being in front of our crowds on our home courts and you know, really getting after those teams that are coming in.
Anya, what do you think it's going to be like playing collegiate tennis? You've won championships, I'm assuming, mainly as an individual, correct?
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to be different about playing as a part of a team?
I mean, I've played team events before, and I've won a team events in Australia, but I don't think that it's going to be the same as college tennis, because I've heard that people get really, not wild, but they get really excited, and that's just not what happens in Australia. So it's going to be different, but I'm excited.
What's your game like? What, if we're going to come out and see you, what do you do well?
Big.
Yeah, I play really aggressive. I don't really hold back, so.
Yeah. Yeah, she fires it up out there, which is pretty fun, you know. I mean, she can bang the ball with the best of them, and you know, the cool part for us as a coaching staff is we see that ability, which you need to play at a super high level, but then also we see these tools that she has within her game that she's going to be able to do some, you know, continue to learn and grow and do some new and different things as well. So we're excited to add to the arsenal, but right now the base is there with some big shots.
Bob mentioned four freshmen, et cetera. All contribute immediately?
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna make an impact right away. Absolutely. I mean, you know, and obviously we have a great core of returners coming back, and you know, we've got eight players on the team right now, and you know, we're gonna need all eight of them to do what we're trying to do this year. But definitely, these freshmen are gonna get in right away and are gonna contribute, because they need that experience, and we know that's gonna help us down the line towards conference season.
Beck, tell us about the other three freshmen. You got California, New York, and Poland to go with Australia.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
You're all over the place.
Yep.
And then how do you decide, after you tell us a little about each of the three freshmen, how do you decide who plays with who in doubles?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, these other three freshmen, Lillian Poling from West Point, New York, a great kid. Her dad is actually the coach at Army, the men's coach at Army. The girl from Poland, Victoria Nosik, I went over, got on a plane. I was on the plane for like 36 hours and in Poland for like 24, I think. So got a chance to meet her and her family over there, though, and that was great. She's just an incredible player, a lot of touch and feel and different things that she brings to the table. And then Giovanna Koljanen is our workhorse. I mean, she is as blue-collar as they come, and has just an incredible story about how she got here, which I could go on and on about some other time. But I'm just so excited, because she'll fight you for everything. I mean, if people even look at her Boise State hat wrong, I'm worried for them. So I'm excited that she, you know, for what she brings to our team. And that makes the matching up for doubles, you know, pretty fun for us. I mean, we've kind of had some set teams in the past over the fall semester here. And, you know, obviously adding these new players, we get a chance to mix in a lot of things. You know, we look to match up some different styles a little bit. You know, Anya, big hitter, for example, we put her with somebody who likes to be aggressive at the net, who can, you know, after Anya hurts her opponents with that ball, her partner can jump in there and help her out from scoring position up there close to the net. So, you know, and we kind of match up different styles, and we're looking to match up a little bit of different experience levels as well. You know, if we can get some of our older returners with these younger ladies, it's going to be, I think, beneficial for them to, you know, learn the system and kind of learn the experience through the older players' eyes as well.
Basketball had a great pipeline, you know, Australian pipeline.
Yeah.
Any chance of that in tennis?
We hope so. I don't know. If Leon's going over there, I'll go with him. So I know that much. But, no, I think, you know, we'd love to get, you know, the top players that we can, you know, and that's worldwide right now for us. And, you know, I think in the future there will be a focus to bring in, you know, a few more Americans. But I think once we get our rankings and our results to where we think they can be with this team, I think we'll attract a lot more of that top American talent that can come in and make an impact right away as well. So I think, you know, you have to be really balanced in both. So we're excited for what we're building, and this is just an incredible group to help us get there, I think.
Ananya, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're majoring in, maybe what else is interesting. We know you've been a champion in Australia, maybe some things away from tennis.
Majoring in psychology. I was going to do that back home, but I didn't go to university back home because the schooling system is very different over there. If you go to university over there, they don't have college sport, so you can't play a sport while doing university. So most people over there that are athletes, they either drop their sport and just focus on their studies, or they stop their sport and they go to university. And I didn't like that, so I'm here.
Well, best of luck, guys. Let's talk a little bit about this weekend. What's
yes,
happening?
Yes, so Friday, 5 p.m., the first match of the season. We're playing Eastern Washington at the Boas Tennis Center. It's a blackout. We've got some the ladies are excited about the brand-new black uniforms this year, as they always are.
Nice.
And so, yeah, we're asking everybody to come out to the Boas Tennis Center at 5 p.m., and then we follow that up with a big match for us also on Sunday. We play University of Colorado at 10 a.m. there at the Bubbles again. So a good test for us, you know, with both of these teams right away. And then it's literally every weekend after that. So if you want to watch free, great tennis, you know, find our schedule online, broncosports.com, and come out and join us.
All right. Thanks, guys. Best of luck this weekend. Nice
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now back to Bronco Tuesday with Chris, Paul, and Bob on 670 KBOI.
All right. We are back. Bob Ehlers here. Basketball tomorrow night, huge game. Can't stress the immensity of this game. Two teams tied for first, playing in the second half of the season is always big.
Well, it's Boise State and Nevada. Both teams are 5-2. Tip-off will be at 8 o'clock. You've got New Mexico and Fresno State at 5-3. So it's getting very tight at the top, and it's a home game. You've already lost one in New Mexico. It's the first of two meetings with Nevada. We'll play them towards the end of the season down there. Vitally important if you want to win the regular season to beat Nevada tonight.
Yeah, no question. Tomorrow.
Yeah. Don't get everybody. I'm not that excited to get out there tonight.
And New Mexico is at home tonight against someone.
There's two games tonight, and there's three tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, but
two tonight,
hey,
three tomorrow.
I just think you just got to keep winning as many games as possible. That was a big win for Boise State on Saturday down at San Jose. San Jose, one of the teams that, you know, you expect to be in the bottom half of the league. You got to go out and take care of business, and that's exactly what they did. We'll have our Inside Bronco Basketball Live show Thursday night at 6 with both Coach Rice and Presnell. And then it'll be Wyoming on the weekend, 4 o'clock tip down in Laramie on Saturday.
Yeah, three road wins already for Boise State. That's awesome. Tonight in a conference, San Diego State at Air Force. That game will be on ESPN3 at 7 o'clock. And then Utah State goes to Albuquerque to play New Mexico at 9 o'clock, that game on ESPNU.
I would assume both San Diego and New Mexico would win, but you never know.
No, you don't. And the home away thing, away teams had a great Saturday, so.
They did. More times than not, they don't. And when Boise State seems to get contributions from a wide range of players, David Wacker was the star on Saturday.
Yes, he was.
It seems like this team is really tough to beat.
Yeah, they are indeed. All right, thanks, Bob. Got a new gig. And, well, they've rebranded you on
rebranded,
KTIK.
Yeah. Still 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
That's all I need to remember.
KBOI News Time is 8:56. Idaho Talks Live coming up after a news break at the top of the hour. We'll bring you up to date on what's happening in CUNA. My goodness.
You're talking about it.
They're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
All right. We are back. Rick Worthington brought you up today pretty much on all that's happening in CUNA, and we will let you know, obviously, as soon as anybody's caught, whatever. CUNA High School is still going, and you've heard it's been most of the morning, this man in his 30s, 6'3", 215 pounds, brown hair, shot at a police officer several times, didn't hit him. But shot at him several times, and they found his car abandoned near Linder Road. So
so he's on foot, and they don't know exactly where.
And he's armed, so and desperate, you know. Isn't that the meaning of desperado?
He's armed and on foot, so at least we know he has all his limbs.
Yeah, desperate people. Mm-hmm. We'll get to Donald Trump in a few minutes, and all of the things he's doing. He's meeting right now with the big three auto workers, housing Health Service pick is getting grilled over Obamacare and has said a lot of things this morning.
You know what's funny? This is probably the best news coverage we've ever had of any president, because it's like they all want to, you know, they all want to examine every single thing he says and every single thing he does just as closely as possible. And so, you know, he's pretty much the only thing on all the networks all the time.
Yeah. I want to know what you think about this story. It's a local story, local meaning the state of Idaho. The drop in Middle Eastern students at Idaho State University over the past couple of years has left Idaho State with a $12 million shortfall. That came out when President Arthur Vilas told the legislative budget writers this morning, we are one of many schools in the United States that had a significant impact on the change in policies of student scholarships from the Middle East. He told JFAC that this morning. It's a 35% decline, and of course, that's going to impact revenue. At the same time, we continue to get only slight increases in non-resident domestic. But that decline ended up in a shortfall of $12 million.
How does that work?
Fewer students, I guess.
Yeah, $12 million worth? What's that? That's like nearly half a dozen students, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that's easy.
Oh, no, I mean, but seriously, how many Middle Eastern students were going to Idaho State University?
Quite a few. Well, here we are.
All right.
At one point, Idaho State, this is Betsy Russell, by the way.
Yeah.
Spokesman Review.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, Idaho State had 1,200 Saudi and Kuwaiti students, which accounted for about 10% of Idaho State's enrollment.
So 35% down would be basically, I don't know, what, 400 or something like that?
Yeah. Now, all listen right. to this. Here's how many they had in 2006.
Okay.
16.
Yeah, so 1,200 is more than that.
Yeah, so they went from 16 to 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
There were concerns about cultural, language, and academic challenges and complaints of discrimination and harassment. Last spring, you'll remember, the Saudi government announced deep cuts in its scholarship program that supports foreign students, including those here in the U.S. A New York Times article a year ago was headlined, "The Mideast Comes to Idaho State." It wasn't the best fit. A university official told the Times that Saudi and Kuwaiti government cuts to scholarships would mean no Middle Eastern freshmen would arrive at Idaho State this fall.
Okay.
Cutting enrollment by more than 250 on top of 100 Saudi students who had already chosen to leave. So let's do the math here.
Well,
250, 350 from 1,200 is 850. I'm back on its way down to 16. Vilas spoke out in favor of Governor Otter's budget proposal for higher education, which only reflects a 2.2% increase in state general funds and 1.2% in total funds. What do you think of this story? This is...
I'm not really sure what to do about it, if anything.
Well, I don't know if there's anything you can do about it.
There
have been occasional stories of...
Believe it or not, I mean, I understand that, you know, people from all over the world come to the United States to be educated in college.
Correct.
And quite often they end up going back home and working for their own government, something like that.
Yeah.
But you tell me that there are considerably fewer Middle Eastern students right now in Pocatello, and I say, yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, it's too bad they're losing the revenue at Idaho State University, but, I can't say that I'm terribly upset about this whole thing.
So it doesn't bother you one way or the other?
Well, no, I guess not.
Well, it actually has no effect on you, so.
Well, not much.
I mean not an immediate.
Probably not.
Impact on you.
But, you know, an impact on anybody. It just seems like, okay, I don't know. I mean, I know people from the Middle East who are very nice, and I don't know. It's just that.
But if you're from the Middle East.
First of all, like I said, I didn't realize there were that many students at Idaho State University.
A tenth of their enrollment.
From Saudi Arabia and Kuwait.
Right. A tenth of their enrollment.
That just seems like a lot. There's nothing wrong with that. But it doesn't upset me that some of them, you know, have to go home and go to school in their own country.
Yeah. It seems like a lot, you know, because it
right.
is.
So. And that's not discriminating in any way. It's just that if their country is not paying the, or if whoever is paying the bill at Idaho State stops doing so, I guess they have to leave. Kind of like if I had stopped paying the bill at Boise State, I would have had to leave.
Yeah, no matter where you were from.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't matter. All right, let's go to the phones. And Mark of Boise. Mark, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I got to agree with Chris. Something smells really fishy here. First off, okay, this is not California or New York or, you know, some other big West Coast, East Coast populated state. So I'd like to know how many students does that 12 million from the Middle East represent?
1,200.
Oh, that many?
Yeah. Well, a tenth.
Oh, my God.
A tenth. One-tenth of the enrollment of Idaho State University last year was...
So, 1,200,
oh
1,200 out of 12,000.
1,200 out of 12,000.
Is what we meant at Idaho State.
You know, I'd like to have a comparison to other states. And, you know, there's just something real fishy because a lot of these people get educated over here. They go back, and then you find them they're involved with terrorism, things like that against our country. I'm not saying that's, you know... a majority of them or anything like that. But, you know, these people do get taught over here. Then they go back and they use the knowledge of what they've learned over here against us. So, I mean, what happened before they had to? And when did this all start? Because I'd like to know if maybe 10, 15 years ago, if that, you know, if it was a tenth of the people or the students that went to that university 10, 15 years ago, what did they do before all these Middle Easterners came over here?
All right, in 2006, or was it 2008?
About 11 years ago.
Yeah, 2008, there were 16 Middle Eastern
students.
Oh, there
you go, Paul. Thank you. See, yep. Great. You came, boom, that was fast. Okay, yep. That I'd like to know what kind of sweetheart deal was worked out between the university and through the U.S. government to allow all these students to come over here.
Well, my thing was, if I was in the Middle East, sending presumably the smartest kids, whatever, you wanted to send them to America to become well educated, would you pick Pocatello, Idaho?
You can learn a lot at
Idaho State.
Nothing
against Idaho State.
Yeah, obviously you can learn a lot at Idaho State University, but you know, it's not on the East Coast, it's not on the West Coast. We're not talking UCLA, Stanford, Harvard, anything like that.
There's no support. I wouldn't think.
Okay, now wait a minute. With all the diversity-loving West Coast states that would, you know, that are obviously they go for the Hillary Clinton, Obama, you know, people, meaning Oregon, Washington, and Seattle, they love to embrace diversity. Are they being biased and snubbing their noses at the Middle Easterners, or it's because they already have an overabundant amount already?
That's a possibility.
I think that's a possibility.
Those schools
quotas. I think there's probably some kind of quotas.
I'll let you go on that, guys.
Okay, thank you.
Right, thanks.
But that's a possibility. Yeah, the quotas. They might have a certain number of spaces for foreign students at the more desirable schools, and they might be completely full.
It just seems to me, and it may have sounded like I was this in Idaho State or this in Pocatello.
No, it's just an interesting.
There's no support group for these students there at all. There's not a lot of Middle Easterners living in Pocatello.
Well, this is true. There are a number of people who can speak Arabic who live in eastern Idaho. Mormons.
They speak Arabic?
Well, some of them can because they've been missionaries in those countries.
Huh?
But that's not everybody.
On 670 KBOI.
KBOI rewards code Pacific. 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 Go to 670 KBOI and enter the word Pacific and earn your 5,000 rewards points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, President Trump plans to sign this according to Fox News. President Trump plans to sign executive orders reviving the Keystone XL and Dakota Access pipelines, which had been stalled under the Obama administration. The moves had been widely expected as Trump blasted his predecessor for effectively blocking the projects amid environmental and other concerns.
I heard somebody last week saying, I think it's just terrible that, you know, they would spoil all that pristine environment by putting some kind of an oil pipeline in there. And I thought to myself, they don't know how many oil pipelines there already are, do they?
And we're talking about what, North and South Dakota here?
Yeah, but there are tons of pipelines in this country.
Yes. While the Canada to Texas Keystone Project was at the center of a heated debate for years until the Obama administration rejected a key permit in November of 2015, the Dakota Pipeline more recently became the subject of fierce protests until the Army Corps of Engineers in December blocked construction of one controversial segment. And that's the thing about a pipeline. It's got to connect to other parts of the pipeline.
Indeed it does.
If it doesn't, you got no pipeline. The company behind the Keystone Project, TransCanada, has not yet reapplied for a pipeline permit after having withdrawn its request under the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
The expected moves come as Trump makes the economy and jobs at the centerpiece of his first week in office. He met this morning with representatives from the auto industry. We saw some video of that a few minutes ago, including both GM and Ford, after meeting a day earlier separately with business and union leaders.
Do you get the feeling that, I mean, this has obviously been his priority the first week,
mm-hmm.
the economy, jobs, and things like that, business, making money. Do you get the feeling that that's pretty much going to be the priority for 4 years? I do. I mean,
yeah, I kind of think so, too.
There are lots of different priorities you can have politically in this country. But you know, in the past, we've had guys saying, okay, I have several priorities. I want to make this better. I want to make this more like utopia. This has got to be great. And meanwhile, you know, we're trillions of dollars in debt. And I get the feeling that Trump's main priority here is to